Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now several months into the Trump administration, and activists have scored some important victories in those months. Yet there's always more to be done, and for many people, the question of where to focus and how to help remains. In this series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I'm Sarah Jaffe, your host.
I'm Dan Maldonado. I'm a business agent with Teamsters Local 445.
All right. And so you just returned from a trip to Puerto Rico with a union delegation, right?
Correct.
All right. So to start off, tell me about your connection with Puerto Rico and why this is important to you to go.
Well, my connection is, you know, first and foremost, I'm Puerto Rican, you know. And so I have a lot of family that still lives down there. And we didn't have a lot of communications with a lot of my family. So, you know. So that was very important for me. And second of all, you know, I'm a Teamster. And there was a little rumor started that, you know, the Teamsters in Puerto Rico were not moving product, which was completely false. So we were there as a backup for them also. You know, it was the union movement, but those are the two main reasons where I went.
Yeah. Tell us just a little bit about what you saw while you were down there.
Oh, what we saw was a lot of destruction. We saw roads, some roads that were impassable. We saw a lot of destroyed homes, and you know, we saw broken spirits. We, you know, there were people who had been without water and food for weeks. You know, I mean, yeah. Very bare minimums.
What part of the island were you on?
Well, we stayed in the San Juan Coliseum. That was basically our living quarters.
Mm-hmm.
But we touched the island pretty much from east to west, from north to south. We went all over the island.
Talk about the work that you guys were doing while you were down there.
Well, a lot of the work that, you know, I myself primarily did was, you know, I worked with Red Cross. We did a lot of the heavy lifting for them. We drove box trucks for them, and we helped distribute food and water. A lot of Teamsters down there, you know, they served as drivers for nurses, mm-hmm. and they went all over with nurses, you know, all different types of towns to see people, you know. So we were like the chauffeurs for nurses, mm-hmm. and besides that, we did all the heavy lifting for Red Cross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what is it that people here are missing about what's happening in Puerto Rico right now?
Well, what's missing is basically, you know, the infrastructure is so destroyed, you know, that's creating such a big challenge for the stuff to be distributed. You know, it's not that,
mm-hmm.
you know, people are not chipping in, but, you know, the infrastructure, there are impassable roads, and there are certain roads that, you know, you really can't get to as a normal civilian that, you know, where you need a military presence or maybe some engineers to lay down a bridge just so you can get from one side to the other, unless you're going to get there, you know, through a helicopter.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's hard for us to get a sense, you know, here without having seen it, really, the breadth of the, you know, destruction that still exists here and the different challenges that people have just getting through the day.
Yeah. And if I might, I just want to add one thing that I think is very important that people are missing out on. Like, when you look at the death toll, right, and right now they're saying it's 51, mm-hmm. and it may not seem like a lot, you know, 51. But the bigger concern is the long-term health effects. You know, let me give you just two examples. Mm-hmm. One from what I knew from another Teamster and a personal one myself. One being that, you know, there was a Teamster that went to a neighborhood with a group of nurses and mm-hmm. the lady had gangrene, you
oh
know?
Yeah.
And yeah. And so basically, you know, she was in such a condition that her daughter kept obeying all her commands. And we basically had to tell the daughter, like, we understand that you respect your parents, but her mind is not there. The gangrene is getting inside of her. So we were able to get a VIP room for her. Unfortunately, her legs were amputated, but that was the only way for her to survive. You know, me on a personal level, I have an uncle who, because he's a diabetic, he had no electricity. So for 7 days, mm-hmm. he didn't take his diabetic medicine. And he has, you know, the funds, you know, he's economically stable to come over here. But now because of that, you know, his legs got swollen, which affected his kidneys, and now he's got a pacemaker. So he's in a catch-22 where he can't get on a plane, because he's got a pacemaker and he's got to stay in Puerto Rico. So a lot of the long-term ill effects is something that, you know, we're concerned with down the road.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that we should think about more. There's kind of the short term and the medium term and the long term recovery issues, and the stuff that you're seeing now, we're getting into the medium and long term questions.
Right. And, you know, right now, you know, and what is the truth? Like right now, the government said that by December that 95% of the island is going to have electricity. Well, my question to the government is that 95% based on the current population of 3.4 million, or is that based on the population that you're going to have left? Because, as you know, there's an exodus of people leaving for the mainland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that, because I don't think we've talked that much about, you know, any of that. The implications of people leaving a place when it's been, you know, so devastated by a disaster.
I mean, you know, when all hope is lost, I mean, you have an island where 40% of it lives in poverty level, you know, where you're making 18,000 less. And everyone knows that when you have times of disaster, you have, you know, you have your people like the union that wanted to go down there and really help out and give a helping hand. Mm-hmm. And then you have those people that take advantage of the situation and their mission is to extort everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like I said, you have 40% that lives in poverty. I think the other 23% is of elderly, you know, mm-hmm. So if I'm a young person, what do I have to look for in the future? If I'm an 18-year-old man right now, you know, I mean, the rebuilding phase is going to take at least, you know, 3 to 4 years, you know. Do I want to stick around for that? And people are leaving. And I mean, the situation, you know, there was an economic problem in the past. It's not a secret. The economy has gotten worse. And right now, let me give you a perfect example. I made friends with a cop down there. He's working 6 days a week, 12-hour shifts. There's not enough money. There's no money to pay him overtime. So the way they're going to repay him is like comp time. So you're working 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, that's 72 hours a week, and 32 of the 72 hours is going to be paid to you in comp time. So the cops themselves are frustrated, and they, you know, they're looking to leave the island themselves, you know, and do other things and try a new career.
Yeah, it's tough. So, you were there for a week?
No, I was there 2 weeks.
You were there for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, was there any sort of noticeable difference from when you got there in the beginning to when you left?
How do I say this? Like, to me, we did what we could, but we didn't even put a dent in the situation. I mean, because it was so much catastrophe that it's like we went to one neighborhood and we know that we left that one neighborhood with food, and the next day we're repeating the same thing, you know. And so when we left, you know, you still had the situation with where they had problems with the power. You know, we were in San Juan, which is the main city, and you know, the mall, La Plaza Las Americas, which was a source of income for them, would have the power would not stay up. When there would be 2 or 3 days where it would close sometimes, and they would reopen, you know, and hope that it would stay on. And believe it or not, that, you know, with everybody shopping online these days, that mall actually happened to be an outlet, somewhere where somebody can go and get AC or just get away from the reality of what was going on. And so we saw that constantly happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to think about the question of public space, right? When like the mall is the public space that people can access.
Right. And so you have other things like, you know, like San Juan, there wasn't a single street light that works. And you know, so if you can, that experience in itself was another experience, because just imagine yourself driving to Times Square without a single street light. And that's what we experienced out there when we were driving also.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. So when you guys were leaving, there were more rounds of volunteers coming in. But I guess the question is, you know, how long is that going to keep up, or how long are people going to be able to keep doing volunteer trips down there?
Well, I got to say, on the union movement side, I got to say I was real proud, because we went down there with 327 people. And I got to say, you know, if not the 100%, at least 99% of us said that we would definitely go back if we were asked to go back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that to me means a lot, you know, and it's a big thank you for everybody that's willing to go back, you know, and that's the biggest way that somebody can repay me. I really don't need a thank you from somebody saying thanks for what you did. The biggest way I can be repaid is that, you know, somebody volunteers to go down and also provide help and assistance.
I don't know. Anything else you think people should know about what's going on in Puerto Rico right now?
The situation is definitely dire, you know, and they need help. They really need help. And, you know, if anybody can help in any way, you know, it would be gladly appreciated. And, you know, the Puerto Rican people are very grateful, and, you know, people really need to understand that they are Americans. You know, I mean, there's a stat that a lot of people don't know about, but when the Vietnam War happened, there was more Puerto Ricans drafted from Puerto Rico than any state on the mainland. You know, so people need to remember that and not forget about them in this time of crisis.
And so how can people keep up with you, and how can people keep up with the work that the Teamsters and others are doing in Puerto Rico?
Well, you know, I don't think that we're, like, really looking for the credit, you know, or looking for the accolades. Basically, you know, the teams just put something out, and you know, they got an overwhelming response of people that just wanted to go help. It's not the first crisis that we've been involved with as Teamsters. If you look at us from 2001, 9/11, we were in Houston the month prior to that with Hurricane Harvey. You know, we've been in Katrina, so we've been in all kinds of disasters. So more than likely, if there's a disaster, you're probably going to have the Teamsters deal with Red Cross as the first responders.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe, with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.